This is the Mobile Arcade Club, a podcast about playing cool mobile games with friends, especially those featured on Apple Arcade. I'm Stephen, and he's Chris. This episode, Fledgling Heroes and Dodo Peak.
Welcome to another episode of the Mobile Arcade Club. Thank you very much for joining us. This is episode 10. We've made double digits, Stephen. That's quite the accomplishment for ourselves.
Who would have thought we've made it to episode 10? It's, you know, been a little while, but yes, happy everyone's still here if you're still here.
Indeed. I think I think we're allowed to be a little bit self-congratulatory in this instance, but enough of that. Only a little bit of self-congratulations.
As a treat.
As a treat, yes. Because our opening topic for this episode is about, is Apple Arcade losing subscribers? Because I asked this question because recently there was a tweet from Patrick Klepek, who is a reporter for, a reporter slash editor for, I think was Waypoint, now it's back to Vice Gaming. I think they've had a few name changes in recent years. But a well-respected reporter in the gaming space, and asked people, are you still subscribed to Apple Arcade? And there were many responses where people were saying, oh, I bounced off of a month, or did the free trial, didn't bother, or, oh, I completely forgot that I was subscribed until you mentioned this, now I've cancelled it, thanks for the reminder, which sort of, I think perhaps that comes into the subscription saturation of the market, that you actually lose track of what you're actually signed up for.
Gosh, I do wonder how these people miss all the emails from Apple. Maybe, I don't know, if you use Gmail, it probably gets filed away to some, I don't know, promotions folder or something like that. So I don't know, but I see it every month and I think, oh gosh, I should probably buy some iTunes credits soon so I don't have to keep paying out of my bank account.
Yes. And especially here in Australia, I can't vouch for overseas, but I know that a lot of our department stores and supermarkets regularly do discounts on Apple and iTunes gift cards. So essentially, we're paying 20% less than what the actual subscription fee is when you work out post-discount. So it's still pretty cheap.
But Works out okay.
Yeah, it does. The interesting thing, and with a little bit of the marketing I did back in my uni days, I know that it's always very difficult to gauge customer satisfaction and also interest in a product based on a public response sort of thing. It generally only attracts those who have a definitive negative experience. And I'm not saying that these people who aren't subscribed had a negative experience, but I think this type of question does lend itself to people sort of coming out and saying, nah, not a part of it anymore, that sort of thing. But what's difficult is Apple tends to be notoriously cagey with their statistics and numbers behind the scenes, aren't they, Stephen?
Yeah, it's interesting. The only time I ever really see numbers is, you know, sometimes they'll show them during those annual earnings calls, but we had no such luck in the one earlier on this year. But maybe sometimes at the start of their sort of keynote announcements for new products, they'll talk about how successful their subscription services are. And I don't know, maybe if there's an iPad event coming up sometime later this year, I have no inside info, I'm just guessing. But like maybe if there was something like that, there might be, you know, a short segment that's gaming focused. They often seem to do that. So maybe they'll give us some numbers at that point. It would be interesting, or, you know, who knows, maybe an announcement more about Apple Arcade's future and things like that. But yeah, aside from when they really want to, yeah, they are super cagey about things. And it can sometimes lead people to think if the numbers were good, wouldn't they be telling us? But I think they just generally don't say numbers a lot of the time, whether they're good or bad for whatever reason.
Yeah. But based on other things that we've read and information that we've sourced around the place, we tend to think that Apple are committing to Apple Arcade for the long haul. Especially, there was a recent interesting interview with Robert Curry, who's one of the co-directors slash founders of Dinosaur Polo Club, the New Zealand developers behind Mini Motorways, one of the first games that we covered, and of course Mini Metro, which was pre-Apple Arcade era. And in that interview with Pocket Gamer, Robert was discussing how what attracted the team to So Apple Arcade, in the first place, was the fact that it allowed them to actually map out and plan support for the game several years in advance. So you sort of hear that rhetoric from developers like Dino Polo Club, and you think, yeah, surely Apple Arcade's doing okay and is going to be around for the long haul. But one can't help but be curious about the health or the success or perhaps not success of how the service is going.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really hard to gauge without those numbers, because I have a suspicion that, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, like us who are, you know, in it of, you know, adult age and all that, who are all going to be subscribing and playing these games because we enjoy them. But I suspect a lot of the subscriptions might skew to sort of family subscriptions, where you've got kids who, you know, you might prefer them to be in games on Apple Arcade because you have this huge library immediately available, and none of them have the possibility of, you know, accidentally spending mum or dad's credit card on, you know, Smurfberries or whatever happens to be the currency of the time. So, yeah, I would imagine that a lot of the numbers, you know, those people aren't going to be answering Patrick Klepek on Twitter as to why they're still on Apple Arcade. So it's really hard to gauge.
Of course, of course. And, you know, Twitter is only one of many platforms, and, you know, it's impossible to tell how well Apple Arcade is doing without, you know, doing comprehensive sampling and that sort of stuff, which is beyond a, you know, a couple of friends doing a podcast sort of resources.
Just a bit.
Just a little bit. Also, I love how Smurfberries is your callback, your constant reference to microtransactions. I love that. I really do.
Oh gosh, I just remember news articles at the time. There was some big event where some child bought some multiple thousands of dollars of Smurfberries, and I think it was before there was an easy way to get refunds on things from the App Store. It was a whole big brouhaha. It was a big deal for an entire day and then promptly forgotten about, but I remember it.
Yes, you will always, you know, you'll always treasure in your memories and bring it to the fore when you can. So let's, exactly. Paying our respect for the Smurfberries. But I think that's as good a point as any to move on. And the first game that we'll be talking about is Fledgling Heroes from Subtle Boom, a Queensland-based developer. And
Queensland, Australia, I should say, you know, yes, for people outside of Australia.
that's a good point to make. And my goodness, Fledgling Heroes is absolutely delightful.
Oh gosh, it's just like immediately the moment you boot it up, it's just utterly adorable and charming from the moment you begin it to the moment you end it. There's not any time during this game where I just didn't have... Okay, there were some moments where I didn't have a smile on my face because I kept dying, but that was not because of, you know, the game not being utterly adorable. It was because sometimes this game can be deceptively challenging, but we should probably talk about what the, I guess, core of the game is. Essentially, you control a series of various birds through 2D scrolling levels. Last episode, we thought it might be along the lines of Tiny Wings or Flappy Bird, and I think it's probably more Flappy Bird than Tiny Wings after I've given it a fair bit of a play. Sort of you tap to flap, as you might expect. You can hold to glide, and those are really the only controls you need to worry about. But there's a really surprising level of finesse and control that you're offered with that fairly simple input.
Definitely, definitely. And the general premise is, you know, these birds are, you know, floating through levels and freeing freeing animals that are, you know, being captive by pirates or other nasties and that sort of thing. And the way that the levels are designed, and they're not designed in a completely linear fashion either, that they often have, you know, two or three sort of divergent paths that you can take, which unlocks different things, or it promotes, you know, replaying levels, because if you've, say, you free a critter during one run of the level, that will stay collected or stay achieved in between plays of the level, so you don't have to try and worry about doing everything in one go, which I think definitely is actually impossible because of the way the levels are designed.
Yeah, there'll be some things where, you know, a fork in the road, you make a decision whether you want to get the animal or say, a golden feather or something on one path, and yeah, it's literally impossible to get everything in one go, so you have to... It's fairly fun to go back and replay things purely because there are more collectibles, but as well as that, there's, you know, just it's interesting to play around with the different paths just to practice with your gliding and flapping controls as well.
Yeah, definitely. And as you've alluded to, there is a decent degree of challenge as well, because there are plenty of obstacles and things to navigate through in these levels. You know, you can't crash into walls, otherwise your bird will, you know, flap out and you'll fail the level, or there'll be these pirates or other nasties that, or sharks, you know, all sorts of assorted badges. Yes. So there are plenty of things that you can't, you know, if you hit them, you know, that's the end of the level, or you'll have to restart a checkpoint. And it's pretty generous with the checkpoints, but that doesn't diminish the challenge. And yeah, it's just really, really fun, really tactile. The simple, easy to pick up controls, I think, is what makes this... what makes Fledgling Heroes such a winner, because it is so easy to pick up and play, and the controls are so responsive that you don't have to worry about input lag or worry about the controls bugging out or trying to get your head around complex controls. You can just focus on the challenge of the level, which I think is, yeah, a definite highlight of this game.
And definitely speaking of that challenge, it does this thing, I'm sure I've brought it up with previous games, but it does this thing where the challenge of a particular level is really up to you to decide. So whether you just want to, you know, get unscathed from the beginning to the end, that's, you know, relatively easy compared to the other challenges, or you can choose to, there'll be all these optional challenges, things like defeating enemies along the way or collecting feathers along the way across the different paths, and some of those can be really, really challenging. With the, so there's a like a pirate lizard that holds a sword, so you have to be able to drop onto its head without, you know, running into the sword in front of it, and it's really quite a pinpoint precise point that you need to actually land on to pull that off.
Yes.
And yeah, often a lot of the paths will be quite narrow, and so you can bounce along the bottom when you've, you know, hit the ground, you'll just bounce along like a weird fish. But if you hit the roof or hit a sort of vertical wall, that's, as you mentioned before, you'll sort of fall back and have to go back to an earlier checkpoint. But yeah, it's one of those games where you can choose exactly how hard you want it to be. You get fairly well rewarded if you choose to go for those optional challenges, but at the same time, I haven't finished it, but what I've played, I've gotten into a second world. It didn't seem like anything was really gated off too badly. You could make progress reasonably without having to do all this optional stuff, so you're not going to really hit a brick wall and then think, oh, I have to get very good at the game to get further and then just give up, because, yeah, that can be, especially for a mobile game that's going for a fairly wide audience, you really don't want to have people dropping off with a difficulty wall like that.
No. And as you say, that is achieved quite successfully here, you know, based on sort of the choose your own challenge level type gameplay approach. And we haven't even touched the fact that there's quite a, no pun intended, fully fledged level editor in this game, which I didn't even have the time to dive into this, but one of the big collectibles that you can get through these levels are further blueprints or further little bits of customization that you can add further variety or further options or customizations to your birds, and also in the level editor. And I don't want to state this as fact because I can't remember where I read it or whether it was something that was posed as a question but wasn't answered. But I'm led to believe that perhaps the levels in this game may have actually been made using the level editor that Subtle Boom created. But don't quote me as truth on that one, because I can't remember the source, but it sounds, I know it wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't be the only game to do that, because I know that there are a bunch of indie games out there that do have quite fully functioning level editors and that their respective games were built using the editors. But Fledgling Heroes may actually be one of them. So there's plenty there, whether you're there for the Flappy Bird type action, which I will say is significantly more precise here in Fledgling Heroes than what it ever was in Flappy Bird. So
yes,
you don't
indeed.
Have to worry about a lot of that imprecision or jank that that was quite synonymous with that game some years back.
And gosh, we haven't even touched on like the various kinds of birds and skins that you can unlock during the game. So like as you go through, you'll sort of rescue birds along the way, and that'll allow you to usually unlock a skin which will be, you know, the same kind of bird that you're using but a different cool color, and they'll have a cute name and everything. But even as well as that, as you go through and get through different areas of the worlds, you'll end up controlling different kinds of birds, and they all control with similar inputs. So you'll either, you know, flap or jump or swim, because you have, say, penguins or walking birds or flying birds,
cute.
Things like that. Oh my God, they're so cute. And like, yeah, they share the same control mechanism, but they feel subtly different depending on what they are. Like if they're swimming, they might fall at a different rate than a flying one. And definitely the running one, the jump is a very, very sharp vertical jump, and then it drops off super quickly, but the glide behaves quite differently to the other birds. And yeah, it's anytime you think maybe you're starting to, you know, to get a hang of how one particular bird works and you might be getting to master it, surprise, there's another completely different kind of bird that controls in the same way, so you don't have to learn a new way to play it, but you can, it's an entirely new movement mechanism to master. And yeah, it's adorable and cute, and I love how this game plays. It keeps surprising me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on that note, I'll want to wrap this up before moving on to Dodo Peak, that one of the things I really enjoyed discovering in Fledgling Heroes after perhaps half an hour to three quarters of an hour, I was, you know, obviously thinking about those Flappy Bird comparisons, which I'm aware that if someone hasn't played that game, that it's probably a redundant comparison, but as it is with any comparison, I suppose. But what I really liked was I was waiting to see if there were any moments that, you know, would really test your endurance for those really looking for the challenge, because Fledgling Heroes is predominantly these contained levels that have a definite start and finish, but what Flappy Bird was well known for at the time is that it was a high score game where it was endless. As long as you could go, the game would keep throwing things at you. And I was really pleased to see that after a bunch of levels in, that there are some of those endurance-based levels here. So I did have a good time, you know, testing myself against some of those endless levels, which was good fun. And as I said, because the controls and how the birds handle in Fledgling Heroes, it's so precise and it just feels so good to play.
Yeah, and those endless levels are fantastic for another reason, in that they make use of the Game Center leaderboards. And so I don't know that I want to compare myself to the worldwide leaderboards, because there's some either very good or very hacky people out there. It's hard to tell with some of these leaderboards. But if you're just looking, you know, if you have a couple of friends who are all playing it, like I have a friend who's playing it, it's nice to be able to compare and, I don't know, and compete against each other, even though, you know, you might not have known. Oh, I saw your scores and I was like, oh, I'll see how I go there, see if I can beat you.
I'll have to jump back in and see if I can beat all your scores now.
But yeah, and Fledgling Heroes, I really, really loved it. As I say, it kept surprising me. I just didn't get bored of it for the whole time I was playing it. But
100% agree.
But yeah, we should probably move on to our other bird-related game or bird-featuring game of this episode. This one being less about flying and more about a walkie, jumpy, egging, I guess?
Yeah, walkie, jumpy, hoppy, eggy, all that stuff.
The official genre name is that.
Yes. Don't ask me to repeat it because I can't remember what I just said.
It's all good. But yeah, so Dodo Peak by Moving Pieces Interactive out of Brooklyn in America. I, yeah, sort of a you play as a dodo, you come out of a little house and all these eggs go everywhere, and you need to jump around this sort of isometric 3D world at this. Once again, it might be a comparison that completely throws people who don't know what I'm talking about, but it reminded me of like Final Fantasy Tactics or Qubit in the way that it's sort of isometric grid-based movement, I guess.
Does that make sense? Yeah, I see it, yeah.
And yeah, I saw you described it as sort of Frogger-esque in the way that you move, and I think that's... I can't believe I didn't think of that. It's pretty much perfect. Frogger or... what's it called again? What's the game on iOS where you play as a frog and you're on a road?
Are you thinking of
Crossy Road?
Yes, Crossy Road. You know,
not everyone's heard of Frogger. It's a very old game, I guess. But yeah, it's sort of controls that way. You need to go and collect all of the eggs and bring them back home, all while avoiding all the various nasties, either you know, obstacles in the level or horrible, horrible creatures that just want to hurt you. And yeah, it's very similar to Fledgling Heroes, very easy to get into. The controls are fairly simple. It's just swiping and holding in a particular direction, and they're the four cardinal directions, so you know, no complex inputs here. But yeah, it just makes it really easy to jump into.
Yeah, I found this one an interesting one, and right off the bat, out of the two, which, you know, it's arbitrary comparing two games that are, you know, quite different from one another, but I found myself gravitating more towards Fledgling Heroes. But with Dodo Peak, I actually found that the controls because I use the touch controls to just be a little bit unwieldy at times, and because of the isometric, you know, diagonal sort of tilted view, I found it a little bit difficult to precisely and reliably you know, move in a specific direction because of as we've used those comparisons to the likes of Frogger and that sort of thing, in terms of, you know, you're hopping from one square to another as opposed to moving in a full 360 degree you know, sort of arc. I don't know how to adequately put into words that I really like what Dodo Peak is trying to achieve, but it just didn't click with me for one reason or another, and perhaps that's on me. Perhaps I need to spend a little bit more time waiting for a bit of an aha moment, but we'll see how we go. But I did like the concept of, you know, you've got to collect the three eggs, and then to use yet another comparison, reminds me of the old, you know, Nokia classic Snake, where your tail grows longer, and then that becomes part of something that you've got to avoid, you know, running into hazards, because the square that you occupy playing as the dodo, as you collect an egg, that will occupy another square behind you. So then, you know, with three eggs, you'll be taking up four squares, and none of those squares can get hit by spikes or an enemy that's moving across the map. So it certainly ramps up in challenge as you collect more eggs and as you go through more of the levels. Did you have a go at any of the daily or weekly challenge levels that Dodo Peak had?
I did, and they are wildly difficult, man. I couldn't finish any of them. I think there were two that I played during the course of the last couple of weeks that we've been playing it, and I couldn't make a dent in either one of them. And I kind of wanted to, because the weekly challenges, there's one of the dodo skins that unlocks just by doing the weekly challenge, and I think it might have been a punk rock dodo, and I really want a punk rock dodo. But man, those things were hard, dude. Those were, I couldn't do it. I tried really hard, and I think I was a little bit similar to you in that the controls don't, at least on touch, didn't feel as responsive as I'd want them to, or I don't know if responsive is even the right way to put it. It's something to do with the perspective and sort of what is obscured from vision, and it's just the way you move. I don't quite know what it is, but yeah, I found myself, possibly due to my own impatience, just kind of trying to get away from things and then not really realizing there were spikes in the way, or, oh, whoops, the monkey chased me or whatever. I don't know if it's, you know, the game, you know, I'm just being impatient and maybe I should just, you know, take my time and be a little bit, a little bit more patient with the game and I'd be a bit more successful. But I did find myself battling a little bit with the controls. I didn't try it with a keyboard or with a controller, so that might completely change it. But yeah, didn't get a chance to try either of those this time.
Yeah, I'm much the same. And I also agree on the point that I don't think it's necessarily the controls fault, or I don't think there's any... I think it's more of a usability thing than it is the reliability of the controls. And by that, I mean it's difficult for me as, you know, a fallible human to sort of adequately know, okay, hang on, have I touched and swiped in the correct diagonal direction here, or have I got this quite right? So perhaps, yeah, it's difficult to really identify what my main issue with the game is. But that being said, I don't want to fixate too much on that, as if I haven't enough already, because the levels are so intricately and lovingly designed. They are really lovely levels, and it is a really lovely game to look at. And I think the two games that we've been playing this week, both in Fledgling Heroes and Dodo Peak, have been utter visual treats in their just, you know, lovely, vibrant colour palettes and their, you know, nice art direction and that sort of thing. And with Dodo Peak, I think going back to those challenge levels, which, my word, I think that the big thing there is that you can actually reach a fail state in those challenge levels quite early without even realising it, which I think that perhaps could be addressed in some way. But again, there's probably a reason that they're referred to as a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess they're probably for that, for the type of person who would enjoy learning how not to get into those fail states, and the associated joy of victory that comes from learning how not to screw up and actually get through it. These challenge levels are going to be for you. Sometimes that kind of level is for me. But yeah, I was just never in the frame of mind to sit and nut out a challenge level when I was playing this game, and as a result, I just didn't do it.
yeah, and to elaborate a little bit further, I think these challenge levels almost fall a bit more into the puzzle category than, say, the platforming category that the rest of the game is built as, because one thing in Dodo Peak, as you progress through levels, is that not only will there be further varieties of enemies and traps and other obstacles, you'll also encounter power-ups which can either make you move faster to navigate a lengthy stretch of traps in a quick time before they trigger, like spikes coming out of the ground or something like that, but also you can eat other power-ups, such as I think when you observe them as turnips, or, you know, a related vegetable or whatever, that makes you a real chonky, real large boy.
Real big bird.
Oh, yeah, it makes you a real big bird, and that anything that you sort of touch in that state, which is a very brief state, you would just completely crush and obliterate. And the reason I say about the power-ups is that in these challenge levels, they are really, really big levels in this sort of isometric diorama ethos that Dodo Peak adopts, is that the challenge level that I played, you've got one turnip that you can access, and because the power-up only lasts for such a short amount of time, I think you've got to figure out ahead of time, okay, what do I actually need to crush, or what trees or rocks in my way do I need to crush using this ability to let me proceed? Because if after using the power-up that you still can't progress, then that's where you reach one of those fail states that we were talking about, and you literally cannot progress any further in the level successfully. So, there's a few different ways to interact with the levels here, and especially with the challenge levels. Yeah, you've got to be really careful and really precise about how you approach the levels and use the power-ups as well.
Yeah, even with the non-challenge levels, like, I felt that there were a couple of ways that felt like the, I guess, right way to finish the level. So there'd usually be, you know, a particular path that would let you, get things in, you know, you'd have a turnip in a place immediately before there's a monkey that might attack you, or a series of boulders that you can crush on the way back up home and things like that. And it definitely felt like there was a fairly intricate design about how there was always more than one way to do it, and you could really go any way you want with enough patience, and you know, you could just throw any intended design to the wind and just do whatever you want. But yeah, it often felt like being patient for a while and working out how, which path, you know, thinking about where you're going to go, what you're going to do first, and how you're going to get back, which is often, you know, more than half the battle is, you know, I've got all of my little dodos following me, now I have to get back with this chain of little dodo chicks following me, then suddenly my vulnerable area is like five times larger than it used to be. You really have to think about your approach on the way back. And yeah, if you can muster that patience, the game does encourage you to do it quickly, but it's not going to give you a time limit or anything. It's just, you know, if you do it quickly, then you've got a high score. Good on you. So
yeah. You'll get, you know, sort of more rewarded for it, because there are opportunities to go off the beaten path and collect coins or other collectibles, which can then be used to acquire different dodo skins in addition to the ones that are acquired through completing the challenges. And I think pretty well it's interesting, because I wonder whether this is the best design choice for Dodo Peak, but to in collecting the coins and getting more rewards and that sort of stuff. With each dodo skins, they're not just cosmetic, they actually increase your speed as well. So I think perhaps with some of these levels and the challenge levels, without actually explicitly communicating to us as the players, that they almost indirectly encourage you, okay, return back here once you've played through a bunch of levels and got, you know, one of the fastest dodo skins or whatever, because you need to have a faster dodo to be able to you know, eat a turnip, turn big and crush more things, because perhaps if you're using one of the earlier dodo skins, then perhaps you might be too slow to actually do what you need to in that space of time. So I wonder whether that's, maybe I found that gated a little bit, and I think we talk about gating progress a fair bit on this podcast, but to me it almost felt like it unintentionally gated me from attempting the challenge levels or attempting some of the in-level sort of, you know, beat the level within this time sort of thing.
Yeah, like I don't know the design ethos, but I would hope that all of the levels would have been designed in such a way that they can be completed with the, you know, the basic earliest dodo possible. But I would expect that the faster ones should just be a way of, I guess, reducing difficulty a little bit, but that's only a hope just from a game design perspective. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe I just need to get better at the game than I am with the early birds to be able to complete some of the levels with the early stuff. But I definitely found, yeah, it's well worthwhile going to the dodo store to buy a faster dodo if you're having any trouble with levels. And that can, as long as you're still patient, it's good to be fast to get past things. But sometimes I found that myself, my dodo was going really fast, so I felt like I needed to make split second decisions, and that always ended up with me getting crushed by a rock.
Yep, and I found that entirely the case as well. And I think, you know, my struggles with the controls, which again I'm still not entirely convinced that that's, you know, the games or, you know, the design, you know, fault of the design as such. I think it's just me needing to you know, practice and get a bit better and more patient, as you've alluded to. But I think perhaps Dodo Peak is about illustrating why dodos went extinct in the first place, because goodness, it's easy to die.
It is. You can get all those eggs, and then, you know, the littlest one at the very end, if one of them gets hit, you're all done. As heartless as this sounds, I wish I could just keep going without the last one.
Yes, and perhaps it would affect, you know, like a lot of mobile games adopt, you know, like a star rating, that if you only complete the level with X amount of dodos, dodo eggs, that you only get 2 stars or whatever. But again, I think that almost taps into, you know, as we've been using a lot of analogies this episode, it taps into a lot of that almost that snake design philosophy in terms of that the further you progress in the level, the more chance there is of failing because of your extended tail, in quotation marks.
It's an elegant way of changing the difficulty as you go on.
Yeah. Now, I certainly think with Dodo Peak, there's certainly plenty there to enjoy, and it's well worth checking out. I think it may just be a case of, is this the game that will gel with your play style, or, are you willing to invest a bit of time and patience in getting your head around the concepts and the controls of the game? I may return to it, but, I'm not sure at this stage.
Yeah, I'm much the same. I've enjoyed what I've played of it. I'll probably jump back because it is definitely a game you can jump into for a couple of minutes, jump out, and you'll potentially have made some progress. So you don't, it's not a high commitment game. So I might jump in again from time to time. We'll see.
Certainly. And that pretty well leads us into the end of the 10th episode of Mobile Arcade Club. So that brings us to what we're playing next episode. And Stephen, You picked this first one, so I'll let you lead the way with the first one.
Yeah, this is one I saw come out on the App Store. I think it was the 20th of January, so reasonably recent. It's called Butter Royale by Mighty Bear Games out of Singapore, and it is billed as have the food fight of your life in Butter Royale. And it's just clicked on me that is a pun on Battle Royale. I don't know how that just completely skipped my mind.
I just assumed you knew.
It just did not. So that clicked. It looks like sort of Fortnite inspired, to go with our analogies to other games again. A sort of Battle Royale, it looks to be a top-down sort of twin-stick shooter where everything is food or kitchen related. 32 player matches, and apparently it can be played offline because I guess all Apple Arcade games need to be able to be playable online. So I'll be very curious to see
offline.
So I'll be curious to see what offline mode means, and also hopefully we have a better luck getting multiplayer matches in this than we did Kings of the Castle last episode, because it might be a little bit of a lonely battle royale if we don't find anyone. It looks really cool. Keen to jump in.
Indeed, that makes both of us. And the other game that we're sussing out is No Way Home from SMG Studio, which is an Australian studio, which you may have played some of the games like Death Squared. And they've also got, Moving Out coming out in next couple of months, which looks a lot of fun. But also, No Way Home is their Apple Arcade title, which is billed as a space survival soiree, which is a very interesting alliteration there. I do like a good alliteration. But it looks like a good sort of 2D space shooter, which I'm quite interested to check out.
Yeah, cool to see what a soiree means in this particular instance. We'll find out.
Indeed. Well, we'll leave it there, and thank you all for joining us once again. Hope you enjoy the games and have enjoyed listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Mobile Arcade Club. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us out heaps. You can follow the show on Twitter at MRKClub. There you can share any thoughts or feedback you have about the show, as well as chat about the club games or maybe even games you'd like to share with the show. You can follow Chris and myself too if you'd like. Our handles are in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.